and Andrew hears the words of a king may not comprehend what he is saying, and all men are ants before the fiery face of God. If sometimes I have mistaken a warning for prophecy, or a prophecy for a warning, the fault lies in the reader, not the book.
Hello and welcome to Two Champs and a Chomp, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast founded in 2010 by Will Lentz, myself, Brett Zeiler, and Greg Atkinson. Major props go out to FFG for putting out a great game, George R. Martin for an amazing product, Card Game DB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward to the Creative Commons licensed music you hear today. Welcome to Season 3.
I like that.
I'm not even sure really what the difference between a prophecy and a warning would be.
Am I the only one
uncertain about that?
I would think that warnings normally incur like danger, right? Whereas a prophecy is not always, you know, talking about danger, Will Robinson. Well,
not necessarily, but wouldn't a warning, were it to be coming from a god, wouldn't that warning be a subset of prophecies?
I guess I didn't write the book.
I don't know.
God says, if you step on that rock, I will destroy your world. And if, you know, like, I feel like that's different than, like, the great man will one day come upon you and grab this rock so you don't step on it, so I don't have to destroy you.
Okay, so perhaps...
As prophecies go, that one's lacking something.
Yes.
Your friend, God.
Perfect. Okay, so here's an idea. Perhaps warnings are things that may be averted, and prophecies are not.
There you go.
I disagree. I have severed the prophecies multiple times in Morrowind. So, I don't know what you're talking about.
I think there's a very large body of science fiction and alternate history that says you can't change it.
Well, you tell that to Vivek, okay? Because I slayed that motherfucker.
Dude, yeah. Motherfucker just sitting there floating.
Dude, you had to
do but kill him.
You had to go and find a way to power your character up and kill him. Motherfucker could float.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
I couldn't do that. I was jealous.
Exactly. Why should he be able to?
You know who else probably doesn't know what you're talking about? Our listeners. Because they probably have no idea who's talking right now and why they're listening to a Morrowind podcast.
That's right. The new Morrowind podcast.
And this is the Morrowind podcast.
My name is Daryl Lloyd. This is also the Morrowind podcast.
My name is Dodd Harris, and I thought I was doing a Game of Thrones podcast.
Nope.
Yeah.
My name is Will Lentz, and I thought I was guest appearing on a Netrunner podcast.
That was last time we did
this.
No one's on the same page except me and Daryl.
Yep. We're the only ones going the right direction.
It's the page of a book that I, or a game or something, I don't even know what it is.
Silt Striders, motherfuckers.
Dude, Silt Striders.
I know.
Mud Crabs.
Dude, right now there is somebody out there, like, commuting on their car, just, like, nodding their head, like, they're damn right. They got it right. Love Morrowind.
Dude, most people do.
Dude, it's a great game. It's perfect.
Welcome to Two One Chump.
Yeah.
Yep, welcome.
See, as soon as I start talking about Thrones, trying to get back on topic, everything just derails. So.
Yeah, now it's dead. Well, how about we clarify then? We have a guest host this week for our final pre-Worlds episode.
That's right. Save the best for last.
Yeah.
The best house and best host.
Well, I have to say thank you, but I think I'm really a guest chump.
Really, we're all guest chumps.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Saw that coming.
Whoa. Willis is not my Batman cup. No one likes my Family Guy joke. I expected Daryl to get that one.
I did not get that one. I am sorry.
Daryl, you're literally killing me.
Listeners, if you got that joke, please email us. Specifically, I'm asking for email. I'll know that you didn't really listen to the episode if you comment otherwise.
For once, send us some damn fan mail.
Well, where might they do that, Daryl?
I don't even know anymore. You can try our Facebook. That's the easiest way.
That's not email.
Facebook.com. It might as well be. It is an electronic message. I mean, what's the difference anymore? I mean, you could send us an email at twochampsonechump@gmail.com, but nobody ever does that. You only do our Facebook, and that's fine.
Well, and the comment, like the comments on Card Game DB.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's nice.
Where most of the activity is now.
Which are lacking. I would like to see a solid 40 comments on there. Dude, I only get like 20. Come on.
We get like 1,500 downloads of an episode, and there might be 2 comments on the Team Covenant thread.
Jeez. Wow.
And yeah. I might get 3 more on BoardGameGeek. It's so hard to get people to respond.
I feel so much better about our ratio than we range somewhere in the 300 to 400 download range. But when you divide out, 10 to 20 comments, that's a
no. You've got nice a fantastic ratio. I'm jealous of it.
I don't know. We might trade that for 1,500 downloads. I don't know.
Yeah,
I would. I wouldn't heartbeat.
I don't know. Fair enough. It's nice to have a close relationship with your listeners. So
we get some traffic on the Facebook page, to be sure. But it's just no matter how much we push it, we get a handful of emails and we get a few comments and we get a few we get good likes. We get a fair number of likes, but it's just hard for people to comment.
It is.
It's just the nature of the beast. The internet is a consumption medium. So 98% or whatever of people around are just going to consume media in various forms rather than create or interact. So,
well, I see what you're doing. You're trying to make your listeners feel guilty about only consuming so that they'll write you. That's very clever.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's all in the mind games.
Actually, not what I was meaning to do, but just
why I called
just
it out so you didn't have
about
to...
how it works.
That's why I called it out so you could deny it.
Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah, Game of Thrones.
Oh, yes, Game of and or Thrones.
Of and or.
Game and Thrones. Anyways, I hear there's a new chapter pack that we're reviewing the second half of. Is this true?
Yeah, we are hoping to physically see this chapter pack before entering the state of Minnesota. Your guess is as good as mine whether that's true.
Well, its official release date is Thursday, and we're recording on Tuesday, so by the time this goes live, it should be available.
Yeah, and there are some stores that absolutely have it. There are some people that have the cards in their hands.
It's interesting.
None of my stores.
According to the internet, at least.
And you can always believe anything you hear on the internet.
I believe everything on the internet.
Especially on MySpace.
So are we going to get on this train?
A lot of money to Nigerian princes.
Who knew they had so many princes over there?
That's a lot.
No wonder they can't get their throne. So anyway.
I know your rating system, because I'm a regular listener, but perhaps you want to go over it for those who aren't as avid a fan as I am.
Yeah, I definitely know we've picked up some newish listeners recently. Some commented over on Card Game DB. Uh-huh. So for any of those new folks or any other new folks, we are going to be rating these cards, much like a student would be rated in the American school system, with an A through F rating with no E for anybody, not familiar with that system. And A's are good. F's are really
F's
bad.
Not so much.
Yeah. Yeah, I won't detail all of the card examples we had thought up again at the moment here, but an A-plus card, for instance, is definitely Mira Reed, while an F-minus card is without his beard.
And if you are not a coward, like some people on this podcast, you will have no minuses or pluses, because in the game of ratings, you're good, or you suck, or you're kind of in the middle.
If you do 10 cards, there will be at least 3 that have a minus, I guarantee it.
Yeah.
I'll be the judge of that.
Okay,
yeah, you'll probably mess something, give something a plus or minus.
This first card might be my first minus.
Daryl's just rating everything a B.
That's right. I can never be wrong, ever. It's foolproof.
Be wrong. I see what you did there.
Yep. I'm glad you caught that. Good on you. But it's future proof. Future proof. Okay. So our first card is a Targaryen card. It is one of my favorite characters. It is Ser Jorah Mormont. He has the Queen's Guard as well as the Knight trait. He is one cost to bring out of shadows. He is three strength. He is a Tricon, so that's military intrigue and power. He is House Targaryen only, and he reads no attachments except weapon. And it says, if Ser Jorah Mormont is discarded from your hand, put him into shadows instead. Then draw one card. I will say that I think this is the first Ser Jorah Mormont that has been printed that does not have a keyword, and that kind of upsets me.
Well, he does. No attachments except weapon.
That's a garbage keyword. I'm talking about a good one. Like joust or stealth, maybe?
I mean, joust is a garbage keyword.
Completely disagree with you.
No, joust is a very good keyword.
You ask Greg about joust and Ser Jorah Mormont, because it was perfect. Anytime. Yeah,
what do you guys think about this card?
I think it's decent.
It's all right. It's a new effect for Targ. I can't think of other revenge type effects for them right off the top of my head.
I mean, it's less revenge and more like immediate recursion.
Well, I'm revenge in the same category as, say, the obvious comparison, the Darkstar.
Yeah, Darkstar.
Maybe it's not so much revenge. I guess kind of the Martell theme is maybe more broadly, don't attack me or it might hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of one of those cards. So yeah, revenge was kind of a misnomer.
The jiu-jitsu style effect.
Yeah.
I don't really get it. I mean, I don't see why I'd, even in a dedicated Shadows build, I'm not sure I'd use him over the discard Jorah.
Or even the two cost, three strength Tricon with stealth.
I might play him over that one. Might.
I'm wary of playing that one because he lowers all my character's strength if something happens to him. But I mean, you get what you pay for. So, but this one, I mean, it's like he doesn't really. I mean, I can build to force this effect, but why would I want to when the other cards we're going to be talking about later all seem to have these synergies with going in and out of shadows, and he's going to go directly to shadows from your hand, which means he's not going to trigger those effects.
Yeah. And he's only from your hand versus Darkstar, who could be going in other ways. You know, as one of the big influence houses, turns out Desperate Measures is pretty good for Targ. But he's not going to work with that.
Nope.
And then they put no attachments except weapon, like he needs some kind of limitation. I realize a three cost, three strength Tricon is a solid card, but I don't know. I'm not a fan. It's a shame because the art's pretty good.
Yeah.
I do like the art.
If
the discard Jorah didn't exist, I'd probably play this guy in a lot of my decks because I do like him more than the two cost one in general, in Targaryen specifically.
Yeah,
but the Jorah that discards allies and what is it, mercenaries, allies and traitors, something like that. Allies is the important thing. When he comes into play, it's going to be hard to ever come up with a better Jorah than that.
Yeah, the opportunity cost is just so high between those versions.
Yeah. So what do we think on this Jorah, grade wise?
That opportunity cost colors it quite a bit. I'm feeling like a C-. He's not bad, but I don't think I'll be picking him.
Yeah, I'm feeling a solid C. In a vacuum, I think he's fine, but the opportunity cost is rough.
Yeah. I hope that there is some synergy through the rest of this cycle to go along with him, but yeah, I think in a vacuum he's probably worse. I'm definitely going to give him a C.
continuing the theme from the first half of the pack, I think he'd be a solid C if he was named something not Sorge or Sir Dora Mormont. But because he is and he has to compete with that much better version, I'm going to give him a D plus. Because he doesn't even really fit with the other Queensguard / Kingsguard cards that we're going to talk about in a minute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
synergize better. I think I definitely give him a C for being good in a specific deck, but not no.
Yeah, if he said something like draw a card when he's put into shadows, so oh that he could be triggered from his own ability or from Barristan's ability, that would be sweet.
That would be neat.
Yeah, normally I love cantrips, but this one doesn't do it for me.
I don't know. I've already been giving a 3-cost, 3-strength Tricon with no negative traits anything worse than a C.
Fair enough.
Well, I think just one, yeah, anything worse than a C, okay, I get you there.
Moving on. Do you want to read the next one?
Are we on Harpy's Scourge now?
We are.
All right, this is a 1-cost Targaryen attachment. It is a weapon. It has the setup keyword, which is always nice to see. And its ability is challenges. Discard a card from your hand to choose a character. Until the end of the phase, that character gets -1 strength, and attached character gets +1 strength.
I'm not impressed by this card, honestly.
Yeah. It's got setup.
It does. So it doesn't have one of the downsides that attachments usually have.
Jorah can carry it.
He can.
He sure can.
You can discard the card that he drew.
No, because the only way he draws a card is if you discard him from your hand, so he can't be carrying this when that happens.
Yeah, it'll be delayed by a turn for you to be able to do that. 2 turns, sorry. Because, no, depends. If you have a way to get gold outside of marshalling. Yeah, no, it's still not really going to ever work very well with him.
No. I know, the big comparison in my mind is to the Barristan Selmy, that you can discard cards from your hand for him to burn guys down by 2. And also give the terminal effect. And I think this card is just way worse than that Barristan. That Barristan already doesn't see much play.
Yeah.
Yeah. Though a nice other note with the comparison there is that Harpy's Scourge does not have to be a participating character or anything like that. Like,
that's true.
Barristan can only target someone in the same challenge as itself. The Harpy's Scourge, if you really wanted to be crazy, you could drop that on a guy on the turn you've got Threat from the North and drop your whole hand to wipe out your opponent's board. Not that I'm saying that's a good play to go that extreme, but it is a possibility.
Well, it's not limited to once or twice or 3 times a phase or round, so yes. And so in a recursion deck, it might be of some use just to get the strength boost, even if you didn't care so much about the... And then there's always the possibility, I suppose, of using... What is it that gives all cards of a certain type ambush?
Dragon's Egg.
Yeah. Now we're straining, I think, to find uses for this card, but there's that.
That's, I think, a common problem of ours. We just really want to try and find a way to make something work.
Yeah, I mean, Targaryen has the recursion to sort of, make use of this effect. And you have, I have noticed that with this cycle, they are trying to change the way we think about card advantage. So trying to make ditching cards out of your hand a good idea. But the fact that it doesn't give the terminal effect really irks me. So it's really only going to be effective if they've already got a terminal effect played on them or, your Threat from the North or whatever.
Yeah. Speaking of the terminal effect, what are most burn decks? Like, as a category, say an agenda.
What do you mean? They're control decks.
No, I was shooting for the agenda.
Hill.
Yes. And Harpy's Scourge has the setup keyword, which won't do anything.
Yeah.
That's true. In that case.
Yeah.
So this probably wants to be in some kind of non-Knights of the Hollow Hill.
Probably like House of Dreams. Burn deck. Pit something.
Yeah, or that's possible. Or something.
Which is a strong deck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, you could ditch a card. God, the fact that you have to do it out of challenges just sucks. Does Danny's Chambers only works in the marshalling phase? Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. It's
when you actually play the character from your hand.
Yeah, that sucks.
And so, what are we thinking score wise?
I'll do it. I'll give it a fat D.
D.
I'm gonna go with a triple D.
Well, that's always good.
Quadruple D.
Oh, yeah. We don't like this card. Prove us wrong, Game of Thrones community.
Do it. All right, William, I'll read this next card so you can read the one after that.
Yes.
I'm going to do you a favor.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
This one's pretty cool, too, though.
It is. I like him. It's a new Ser Barristan Selmy. He is neutral, 4 cost, 4 strength, military power icons. He's a Kingsguard, he's a Queensguard, and he's a knight. He has no attachments and renown. And challenges, kneel 1 influence or pay 1 gold to bring a Kingsguard or Queensguard character out of shadows.
Dope!
He's really lackluster without reading the rest of the cards.
Yeah, that's the tricky part. His ability depends so much on the other Kingsguard. But let's just say for the sake of discussion that many of the other Kingsguard are worth putting in and out of shadows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, he's pretty good.
Yeah. He could be the best Barristan Selmy yet.
And yet he can't carry a weapon. Which is
yeah.
He does not know. I realize he's a really good character, and they needed to limit him, but it seems like he ought to be able to carry a weapon.
And hand combat only. Ser Barristan's a real man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Only a fool would trust his life to a weapon.
I don't know. As far as Barristan goes, whereas a lot of the other Kingsguard guys in the pack, they could potentially be played in generic Shadows decks. This Barristan really needs to play in a dedicated Kingsguard Shadows deck to be able to really do much of anything. So that is a mark against him.
And it's worth noting, like you said, he needs to be in a dedicated Kingsguard deck to be worthwhile. I really don't believe there are any Queensguard that will interact in a meaningful way with his ability. I said in a meaningful way.
When Jordan,
it depends what you consider meaningful way.
Anything that's not like just exactly the same as if they'd come out during the standard Shadows action there one time.
Yeah.
You catch somebody off guard or something, bring out your Jorah.
If someone discarded Jorah and put him into Shadows, they already know he's there. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of a bummer that we didn't also get any Queensguard in this pack that would interact with that somehow.
Maybe there's more coming. I mean, there's a lot of Dothraki Queensguard. There's the Brotherhood-esque pack is coming up.
There's Guided by Quaithe. Is that out now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you can get Guided by Quaithe, a Kingsguard character in the Shadows.
What?
And they have kept giving us Bannermen after the first pack, so.
So, yeah, we may see some Queensguard.
You never know.
All right, guys. Score-wise.
A lot of it depends on the rest of the Kingsguard, but for the sake of argument, let's say they're really good. I think that's going to make Selmy pretty darn good as well. I'm feeling like a solid B for Selmy, assuming he's in that deck.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna give him a C plus because he is like he'll only be good in a specific deck. Now that deck can be played in out of any house because they're all neutral, but outside of a King's Shadows Kingsguard deck specifically, he's not very good.
I am torn between giving him a B and giving him a C. I will give him the CB. So, I'm creating a new letter.
So that you don't have to give him a plus or a minus?
Yeah, I'm not going to be wrong. So.
CBs are guys who go and build airfields in combat areas.
I thought they were those radios that truckers use.
Oh, yeah. I'll give him a B. I do enjoy some renown. And that's great synergy for a Kingsguard or Queensguard Shadows deck, so why not?
Yeah, for the exact same reasons that Brett said, I'm going to give him a B-.
All right. Well, William, your birthday present, go ahead and read the next one.
All right. This one is also a neutral Shadows character. This is Sir Jaime Lannister. He has an S cost of 2. He has 3 strength, a military, and an intrigue icon. Of course, he has a Shadow's Crest. His traits are Kingsguard and Knight. He also has no attachments and renown. And as a response, after a card comes out of Shadows, draw 1 card. Draw 3 cards instead if you control 3 or more Kingsguard characters. That seems pretty rockin'.
This guy's pretty good.
Very good.
It's when any card comes out of Shadows. So, of course, he can trigger off of himself, off of any of your other Kingsguard, off of any Shadows cards an opponent brings out.
Mm-hmm.
And for Jaime, no attachment, including weapon, makes sense.
It does.
Yes. I do like that this Jaime is very carefully placed, so you can only see one arm.
Which hand did he lose? Because that's his right hand we can see, and he has a weapon in it.
Lost the left.
False. He lost his right.
Damn it.
He lost his sword hand.
Yeah.
Thought it was the left for some reason.
Shucks. They should have flipped the art.
Mm-hmm.
It has a weapon in it. I just want to point that out.
Yeah, yep. It does.
Did I mention it has a weapon in it?
You know, I missed that. Where's the weapon?
You mean what? The sword that his hand is resting
on? Yeah, I was going to say, what are you talking about?
It was a joke.
Oh.
Ha ha ha.
Yeah. Now that's, I mean, that seems pretty solid.
I mean, and if, I mean, I think based on abilities like this, Kingsguard are going to be awfully popular. But, I mean, right off the bat, if you are not playing against another Kingsguard deck, this Jaime comes out of Shadows and immediately draws you 3 cards.
No, what? You have 3.
Do what?
You have to control at least 3.
Oh, sorry.
But he's the third one, then yes.
Yes, my bad. I was reading it as control more.
Yeah, that'd be way better.
Jeez,
yeah,
that would be Jesus on ice.
I'm trying to reread again as I talk the very small picture on AGOT card since I don't have the physical card, and so I misread that. My apologies.
Yeah. But no, he's still good.
Still real good.
Very good.
I mean, there's always much we can say about neutral card draw.
Yeah. I mean, and very repeatable card draw.
Mm-hmm.
We already know there are several very playable Shadows cards from the King's Landing cycle that can be triggered multiple times. Venomous Blade, for instance, is going to be triggering Jaime turn after turn.
Serio Pharrell.
Mm-hmm.
With Epic Battles possibly multiple times in one turn.
Maybe in a Baratheon deck, you're doing some of that Queen of Thorns, Sister of Truth combo shit.
You're probably not doing that.
Wow.
Man,
I would.
Jaime, that's a great point with the Epic Battles and Serio. This Jaime might really be a nice boon for that deck. Some card draw, so they get several cards to just power through that second turn and try and slam home a victory. That's pretty sweet.
As Brett said, this is card draw that can be dropped into any house, including one or two that may be weak on draw.
Mm-hmm. And some of those that are weak actually have some solid Shadows cards, like Baratheon.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I always forget the name of it.
Black Cells or Kingswood Trail.
Black Cells.
Because both of them are good and don't see much play.
Well, Black Cells is just a phenomenal control card. The Kingswood Trail is a little trickier, but resets itself, puts itself back in Shadows, so it can trigger Jaime again.
Yeah.
That card single-handedly won me a mirror match in a regional.
Nice.
Because he never got to use his Robert once.
Oh.
That'll happen.
That's funny.
All right, guys. Score-wise, with Jaime, I'm leaning towards a B myself. I'm not willing to give him the A. But he's definitely a really good B.
I'm leaning towards A minus, I think. He's not quite Mira good because he's not repeatable by himself, but he's real good.
He's also really good with Mira.
Oh yes. Yes, he is. Like, she needed more reasons to be an A+ card.
I love drawing cards so much. We knew this was going to happen. I'm going to give an A. Absolutely.
I believe you have a motto, Daryl. What is that?
It was draw equals win, unless your name is Daryl.
Daryl, I've got a great idea.
Okay, what is
related
it?
Related to that. At Worlds, let's get drunk.
Okay.
Get you a tattoo that says draw equals win.
If you pay for it, I say this, if somebody pays for it, I will get this tattoo.
Listeners, let's make this happen.
I mean, Dale, you do know that we know rings, right?
Yeah, I do.
And we have to find a tattoo parlor in Minneapolis that will tattoo a drunk person.
I can fake it. Come on. Sure. It'll be fine.
Okay, well, Daryl's already agreed to it. We can skip the drunk part.
Yeah.
Let's do it. I can do it.
What do you think, Jamie?
I will give him a B+, and the only reason I'm not giving him an A is that you do have to have a significant Shadow's presence to really get the most out of him. Mm-hmm. So he is somewhat slightly limited.
If he was cost one to bring out of Shadows, I could absolutely justify him being an A, but he's still going to be an A because I'm Daryl.
All right, Daryl. Next up is Marin Trant.
Marin Trant. All right, so we got Sir Marin Trant here. He is neutral, unique, one cost to bring out of Shadows. He has a military and a power icon. He's 3 strength. He has the Kingsguard and the Knight trait. He has no attachments and stealth, and he reads response. After a card comes out of Shadows, each opponent must choose and kneel one standing character or location he controls, if able.
Kind of deceptive. It looks crazy strong at first. Much like Jamie, you can trigger off of himself or any other card you have or any card your opponent has. But they get to kneel any of their locations. So if they've got, say,
a great
gold roads or great keeps sitting around, they can just kneel those.
Kneel them all day long.
Yeah.
No, he's not spectacular.
It is nice that he's a 3-for-3 Bicon with stealth, though. Mm-hmm. He's still got some pretty solid stats.
And yet another member of the only group that's allowed to wear weapons in the presence of the king who's not allowed to wear one.
And in fact, is holding one in the art again.
He is. Yeah.
Maybe it's more there for their protection, maybe, to keep their value. I don't know.
I see a theme developing.
Yeah. I don't see a lot of Shadows cards I would want to put weapons on anyways.
It's the principle of thing.
All right. Yeah. Well, I would rather them not be able to get Milk of the Poppy or Motley or something like that. I'll take it.
If they're not attached to the sub-weapon, they would still...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, if the idea is we're going to be bouncing these guys in and out, it's really just a protection. It still just strikes me weird.
Yeah, I get it. Thematically, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, I don't know. Play him with some location destruction, see if you can knock out some of those locations. You could still run into some issues with things like the Great Keep or the Gold though, since they're limited.
Harder to remove those.
Yeah.
Wintertime Marauders doesn't care.
Boom, boom. Greyjoy Kingsguard deck.
Greyjoy Kingsguard control.
I kind of like the sound of that.
Sounds.
The wheels are already turning.
Yeah, I mean, because if you can get rid of those chump locations, then this ability becomes very strong.
Finding room for this package and that, though, is going to be hard.
Mm-hmm.
Bunch of 3 and 4 cost characters in a choke deck.
Yeah, that's rough. All right, Sir Marin Trant. What are you thinking? I'm leaning towards a C- myself. His effect really just isn't that spectacular. But he is a well-costed Bicon with stealth.
Yeah. I'm feeling a solid C for him, to maybe a C+. He's well costed. He's not up against other, highly playable versions like some cards in this pack have been. And he slots right into not only the Kingsguard deck, potentially just a Knights of the Realm deck that wants to up their knight count. He just seems very solid, even if the ability's not as impressive as it looks at first glance.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and agree with you guys there. I'll give him a C. He fits in nicely. He's got some stealth. Like, he's decent.
I like the C. Again, same limitations as before, but in the context of the whole package that's probably going to be going together most of the time, he works. He can be bounced in and out to trigger other effects, and even a little bit of Neil can go a long way if it hits right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and if you've got ways to bring him or others in and out of shadows multiple times a turn, there is no limit on this other than having guards to bring out of shadows, so it could add up over the course of a turn.
In case I didn't say, a C for me as well. Okay, so next we have Sir Mandon Moore. He is a unique S1, 3 strength with 1 icon, which is a military icon. He has no attachments. I won't comment on that again. Deadly, if you have more cards in shadows than each opponent, opponent's characters cannot be saved. I like that effect.
Boom.
Plus taste the flavor is cool.
Taste it, Greyjoy.
Yeah, fuck you, Greyjoy.
I can dig on this.
I mean, not just Greyjoy. I could see, some of the Baratheon builds, too, mm-hmm. that keep bringing those loyal guards back, Dale and Mel Scheme and such like. Yeah. And,
or if you play a lot of Greyjoy, shut that crap down.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting. He's the only one of these Kingsguard we've seen so far that wants stuff to stay in the shadows.
Which really makes him kind of not fit with the rest of the pack. The Kingsguard guys, at least.
It might, given what we're going to see in a minute.
You could add versatility.
I don't know. I actually really like this guy, just because he's good in any Shadows deck just on his own.
Yeah.
Which is once something that we can't say about, Jamie's good in any Shadows deck. And Marin, I don't like very much at all, but Mandon's really strong.
He would be great in Tunnels.
Yeah.
Yeah. Though his Deadly is on the least useful icon for Deadly to be on, which is a bit of a bummer.
I can live with that.
He does compete with a decent card of the same name.
I like this one a lot better than the other Mandon.
And in fact, the other Mandon probably works better with the other effects in the pack.
True.
So what are we thinking, guys? Sir Mandon Moore? More like Sir Mandon Boar.
Yeah.
With all the same caveats as all the others, I'll give him a B-.
I'm leaning towards a solid B because fuck Greyjoy.
Yeah. I think that's a pretty
good argument.
Greyjoy is looking awfully strong, so his rating may vary based on how powerful Greyjoy is at any mm-hmm. given time.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I give him like a C+ at the moment.
Yeah, I've also got to give him a C. That Deadly, it's not in a great spot, and unless you're playing a lot of Greyjoy, I'm not sure how often that's going to come in handy. Sure as hell doesn't help you against Martell. So, I'll give him a C.
All right. Well, next up, we have a new Sir Preston Greenfield. This is like, the fourth Sir Preston Greenfield for a character that has, no screen time?
And the first playable one.
Yeah.
The Dominance discard one isn't terrible.
He's not very good.
You're right. It's just atrocious.
And the other one's not even worth mentioning.
Yeah.
So, wait, there's another one?
The one that when you win a challenge on
Unbeaten
Power. No, it was a joke.
Oh, okay.
Well, you are really not fun.
Yeah, you and these, what is it? Have you been watching British television recently or something? What the fuck?
You know, no, I haven't. I've just been, I've been playing video games, but we'll get to that.
Oh, yeah, we will, I'm sure.
Sir Preston Greenfield, he's a unique neutral character. S0, which is always attractive.
Mm-hmm.
He is 2 strength, military and power icon. He's a Kingsguard and he's a knight. He is also no attachments. And it's an any phase ability. You can return a Kingsguard or Queensguard character you control to shadows. Limit once per round.
I'm going to add to what you said. Not only is S0 very attractive, it is, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, the best shadows cost.
I mean, that's like saying 0 is the best cost for characters.
Not always.
It can depend. What about for Snow Winter? You want that cost 3 out there.
Yeah, exactly.
Or S1.
Or that Stark event that I keep getting the name of.
If I'm ever sitting across the table from a Kingsguard shadow deck, this is going to be the first guy I try to kill.
he's a pretty big target because he enables the deck.
He's the linchpin of the whole thing, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Which is the downside to the S0, as Daryl pointed out.
Yeah, and I got to give shout-outs to this art. I have no idea what scene it could be out of the books. I have no clue. But I am a fan of the game Dark Souls, and this shit looks totally Dark Souls to me. That looks awesome. So, props to whoever did the art on this. I can't tell from here, but that looks awesome.
I believe it's out of the Riot of King's Landing. The really the first time that Preston Greenfield gets any screen time, and also where he gets murdered.
Does he jump through like a fucking chapel stained glass window? Because that's what it looks like.
No, he gets murdered by a bunch of peasants.
Yeah, oh. Yeah, he gets beaten to death by rocks.
That is really sad. I'm so glad I haven't read these books. I should have said that.
Would you start Ask Dodd?
I kind of remember it was him or Blunt who beat up Sansa.
They all did, really.
Okay.
Then yeah, everyone except for the Hound, yeah.
Sir Mare, I think, is the big one.
Yeah. I think Preston was young enough, at least. I think it mentioned that he always looked very embarrassed to be doing it. But he didn't actually refuse like the Hound.
So Preston Greenfield. Again, there's not a lot to say. I mean, he's the linchpin of all the Kingsguard decks, you know, bouncing in and out of shadows to trigger their effects multiple times.
Yeah. Not just that, he could send Queensguard back to shadows.
You're right.
Which actually is relevant with one Queensguard, the Shadows Targaryen Barristan Selmy. It's going to be expensive to do. I wish that Selmy had only like an S1 or an S0 cost. But I could kind of see the play of being able to return him to Shadows and bring him back out every turn to look at your opponent's hand and then name a card that they can't play.
Yeah, that's true. And Bruno did prove how important knowledge of your opponent's hand is.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that could even, especially now that Aegon's Hill is off the restricted list, that could combine. You could bring him out, take a look at their hand, choose something they can't play so that it's still there so you can knock it out with the hill.
Has anybody with too much pedant in them asked if you have to have actually brought the card out of Shadows to return it to Shadows under this language, or have we not gotten to that point yet?
You mean, could you return something that's already in Shadows?
No, I can just see somebody getting on a forum somewhere and saying, what if I cheated it into play, or I got it out of my dead pile? If it wasn't in Shadows, can I return it?
Oh, because it never was to begin with.
Somebody will do it. You watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is kind of funny language.
That is a good point. Technical English says that that's not possible, but I'm very certain FFG English will say that it is.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
This guy is awesome.
Yeah, he is.
I think he's awesome on his own. I'm going to give him an A because I think that he's going to be good in like Stark Epic Battle decks. I think he's going to be good in Martell Shadows decks, Baratheon Shadows decks. He's going to be able to trigger those Shadows triggering cards whenever you want, and you don't have to win a challenge, you don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
You just trigger him and that's it. And that is awesome.
Yeah, literally any Shadows deck wants him.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
And he costs zero to bring out. Like, that's money.
So just a question generically about him then. How many copies would you guys feel comfortable playing? He's just 2 strength, but he's so good in, you know, triggering this stuff. Would you guys go so far as to play 3 copies?
I don't know. I might play 2.
In a Kingsguard deck, there's a good chance I would play 3.
Yeah, I think 3 in a Kingsguard deck. In another deck, it would depend.
Yeah.
If I don't have things to use his ability on, I don't think I need more than 1.
Yeah.
Because I can play 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in a vacuum, he's not, like, if you just look at him and you didn't consider all the possibilities, like, that's not very good, but there's so much that you can do with him. You got to run 3, I would assume, in a Shadows deck.
How fun is it, just thinking about him, since he's any phase and you don't have to win a challenge or anything to send him back Shadows, how fun is it to wait until pre-plots and then send them back into shadows just to make your opponent wonder, are they going to play the Valor now? Did they send him back so they can avoid Valor? What do I need to do because he's going to play Valor? And then, of course, you don't play it.
Yeah.
It's a, you do play some mind games.
Yeah, it's a total boner train. It rules.
I do like any card I can bring out of Shadows in the marshalling phase or the draw phase.
Yeah, that is pretty nice. I'm gonna give him a B. He is really versatile in a Shadows deck.
I'm feeling a pretty strong B plus to A minus. The effect itself is not as powerful as, say, Jamie, but it just makes so many Shadows effects just really run well. Not just
and Parting
the King's Guard in this pack. Yeah, Parting Blow too.
I love Parting Blow.
He just slots in so well to literally any Shadows deck.
Yeah, B plus for me, because he's a linchpin and an absolutely essential piece of the Kingsguard package, but he can be really good elsewhere. So I don't think he's game changing, but he's very, very good.
All right, William.
All righty. Well, sweet. I get to pick out and read the other favorite Kingsguard of mine. This one is Sir Aris O'Kart. He's an S1 with 3 strength, military and intrigue icons again. He's a Kingsguard and a Knight with, yet again, no attachments. And his response is, after a card comes out of Shadows, choose and stand one character you control. Limit 3 times per phase. Just per phase. So, if you really wanted to, with Preston around, you could do this every single phase. What can you do with 7 stands a round?
You couldn't do it in every phase.
Well, I was going to say.
You can do it once per round.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. It was Preston Limited. My bad. I had forgotten about the errata on that.
Man, no. He's... This one, more than a lot of characters, I think really hits a big opportunity cost. Because the Lannister Martell one that discards guys is... So insanely good. To the point that even in, like, if I was playing a Lannister Shadows deck, I really think I'd still probably want that one over this Aris.
Yeah, Aris O'Kart, the one with the House affiliations, is so, oh man. He's just, like, my eyes glimmer as I first draw him. Like, it's total toner boner train. I don't know if he has quite as much, like, if this one has quite as much utility as the other one.
I mean, despite rules dashing, you know, my hopes and dreams of sick combos, he's still got a lot of versatility.
Yeah, he's comparable to the Long Lances, although he is unique, so you don't get to have, you know, several Aris O'Karts and play to trigger off of.
Which is probably a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
But with Barristan and some influence, you can trigger him 3 times all by himself.
That is absolutely true.
Mm-hmm. Or gold. Didn't somebody let you spend gold or influence?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty nice on as far as being easy on the influence or sorry, the resource curve there.
I can't grade him too harshly because Long Lances is such a strong card. Any effect that's similar to that can't be too bad, but I'm gonna be hard pressed to see this guy better than a C.
Stand is so freaking great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll agree with that.
Especially when you've got other cards like Barristan that let you use him in the middle of the phase.
Yeah. And, you know, he's going to be good in a, like, a Stark deck, too, that's got Mirrored in there, so.
Oh, yeah.
Stand rules.
Also, just throwing this out here again, he's pretty decent in the Epic Battles deck. Who wants those characters standing in those other phases to make those military epic battles with?
Yeah.
Make them a little less dependent on their non-kneelers.
Mm-hmm. True. Yeah, spread that around a little or give them potentially enough standing characters to come over the top of defenders if the opponent had a pretty good start.
All right, so I already gave my grade a pretty solid C, maybe a C plus at best. What are you guys thinking?
Part of me wants to just give this guy a B because I've witnessed time and time again how important Stand is in the Game of Thrones. You forget it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to give him a B. I think that Stand can be just paramount in certain situations.
I'm right there with you, Daryl. Like I was saying earlier, this is probably my second favorite out of the Kingsguard effects. I think he's pretty rocking.
I'd give him a B+ if he wasn't named Aerys Okart, but since he is, and acknowledging how great Stand is, I'm going to give him a B-.
Fair enough.
I can respect that.
All right, Daryl, you have everyone's least favorite Kingsguard member up next.
Yeah. Story of my life.
All right, the first issue of this Kingsguard member and the LCG.
All right, so here we go. We've got Ser Boros Blunt. He is a neutral, unique Kingsguard with the S0 cost to bring out of shadows. He has 2 strength, military power. He is Kingsguard and a knight. He has no attachments. He reads response. After Ser Boros Blunt comes out of shadows, each of your characters gets +1 strength until the end of the phase. And I will also add that, again, this art is super sexy.
Indeed.
This looks fantastic. So, man, they really stepped up the art. I mean, we've said this time and time again, but this looks really good. And I don't know how much of a least likable card this is. I think that +1 strength, I mean, you know, you've got the Wildling Agenda, you know, gives +1 strength. Now, granted, that is all of the time, not just when some douche comes out of shadows or whatever. But that could be all the difference. It's pretty neat.
And I was saying, not, as far as the character goes, everyone's least favorite.
Oh, I have no idea.
Correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not really great on keeping my lore straight, because I read a lot of books, but isn't Boros Blunt the one that Jaime said was the deadliest of the Kingsguard?
No, that was me.
Yeah.
Ser Boros Blunt is the joke one.
Okay.
Like, yeah.
So he's not the one who was the deadliest but couldn't kill a dwarf.
No. That is absolutely Sir Mandon Moore.
Well, and the reason that Jaime said that he was the deadliest wasn't as much his, you know, skill with arms, though I'm sure that was a factor. The reason was that he just had, like, the best poker face.
Ah.
And Jaime was commenting that, like, in a duel or something, you had no idea what Moore was about to do because he was just blank. They talk about his dead eyes all the time.
Gotcha. Okay, well, sorry for the distraction then.
No, that sounds
really
awesome.
This is a really, really nice effect, especially, again, from a zero to bring out a Shadows card that can drop into any deck that can use Shadows at all without needing the rest of the synergies. It's a good card.
I mean, Ser Boros Blunt is a card that, I mean, maybe not even in a Shadows deck, because it's just after he comes out of Shadows, all your guys get +1 strength. It's not a big boost, but this is a card that I could see play in really any deck.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wish he had a keyword, but that is just me asking for too much.
Oh, he does.
No attachments.
Oh, okay. Sure. A good keyword. You guys need to learn that no attachments does not count as a keyword.
Well, again, okay. I think that the no attachments for these guys thematically is weird, but it is more of a protection since they're kind of intended to bounce in and out. Keeps them from getting flame kissed or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
So with Ser Boros Blunt, what are you thinking? It's not a terribly flashy ability, but it is an ability.
Yeah. Yeah. +1 strength for all of your characters, despite their trait, their house affiliation, anything like that. I'll go balls deep in this. I'll give him a B.
I'm not feeling that good. I'm just feeling like a C. But he is nice if you've got Selmy out and can send him in and out of shadow several times.
You can drop him in anywhere. I'll give him a B for that.
Yeah, I'll give him a C+ because he's, like I said, he's the card that I could see myself maybe playing in literally every deck. He may not make every cut, but...
And didn't he deserve a B for that, then?
Oh, man, but his effect is just...
It It's very like subtle yet
powerful.
It could powerful.
Change a key challenge phase. It could really do that. Could.
It could okay, really, you, it could really
Don, hose. you talk me into it, Don. He's a bee.
Okay. It could really hose that hatchling's feast your opponent's planning to play on.
That's
his
absolutely true.
Yeah, because you know they're waiting until the challenges phase to do it. You know, just that's always kind of the smart play. But if you've got Blunt sitting there in shadows and bring him out at the start of the challenge phase, you may have the chance to completely screw him up.
That's true.
Hopefully pull it on the intrigue, but, you know.
Yeah.
All right, Mr. Dodd, last card of the pack. I guess the honors go to you.
Oh, this is a great card.
It is.
It is the plot. It is a 3/7/1, which is pretty sweet. When revealed, put a Kingsguard or Queensguard character with the Shadows Crest into Shadows from your dead or discard pile.
Ugh.
That is just sweet.
I just messed in my pants.
Yeah.
That is fantastic.
He dropped his cupcake.
Yeah, you could say that. Goodness, this is fantastic. Like, if the characters themselves didn't make you want to run a Kingsguard deck for some odd reason, after you see this plot, you're like, you know what? I need to put a Kingsguard deck together.
Yeah. I mean, I already really loved Many Powers Long Asleep.
Hell yeah.
But the stats on my Oath are better, and the characters are, you know, across the board, I think, going to be better as far as the Kingsguard, Queensguard versus random holy chuds. And this has a more broad effect because it can get them from the discard pile too. This is freaking awesome.
It's a 3/7/1. It's, you consider that just for like, I've got a seventh plot slot and I don't know what to use.
I mean, it's no 4/5/1, but
it sure isn't.
But it's damn good in a game where I'm seeing that initiative matters more and more.
Indeed,
you know, a 3/7/1 could be just what the doctor ordered.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
It's all right. All right to pretty good.
All right to pretty good. Bring back any of your crucial Kingsguard or Queensguard characters. So good.
I mean, I can't give it any better than Barrison, because again, it is required. I mean, I'm not as big on his Dodd as. I don't think I'd play this ever in a billion years.
You would never play
our deck.
Well,
I'd ever have the empty slot, but I mean.
Yeah, well, outside of a Kingsguard deck, sure.
You do need a critical mass of Kingsguard or Queensguard, but I don't think that has to be real high.
Yeah, I mean, would you play Power of Faith, you know, outside of a Holy Crest deck? I would sure would hope not, but that is still just a baller plot in that deck. I think that this is just titty town.
I do have to agree with Daryl, especially that choice of example.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I knew I'd get you with that one, Will.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm giving this card a pretty solid C. It's definitely not a bad card.
I don't get that rationale. I mean, I understand that, yeah, it requires Kingsguard and Queensguard characters in your deck, but if that's something you're already rolling toward, I mean, it's money. I think it's damn near an auto include.
Well, for that deck, is it
not? Yeah.
They're all uniques, so your synergies are dependent on them. So in that deck, it is an absolute necessity. So I'll give it a B minus because, again, it's limited to that deck. It's, but no, it's an auto include for that deck.
Yeah, I think I'm spot on with Dodd there with the B minus. It's a very strong effect, and an auto include for it just happens to be limited to that one in particular.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna give this card an A. It is not a general A just because, I mean, obviously, but in a Kingsguard or Queensguard deck, however you want to say it, it's in there every single time, and it is a powerful, potent effect that is going to piss plenty of people off.
Even though they know it's going to be coming at some point.
Yeah.
Yep. Maybe Outwit will see a lot of play.
Sure.
What, Pacers are a thing again?
Hey, it doesn't just have to be Maesters. Lanny's got a couple different non-unique Learned Crest chuds now.
That's true. And there's always the one storyteller in the game.
Mm-hmm. They're not great, but they are there. So I've got one last thought then, or question about the pack. Since all of these Kingsguard are obviously designed to work as one unit, what do we feel about their power level, like, as a unit or as a deck type, rather than just all the individual cards? I feel like the sum of these parts will probably be greater.
I mean, they're definitely strong, but I don't see a Shadows deck running Kingsguard could do well, but if you're actually wanting to run, like, a Kingsguard deck, it's still...
Oh, you mean, like, with the white book? No one. No one is going to do that.
So, someone's going to do it. They've probably just never heard of our podcast or tournament play.
Because that does actually make me want to point out that it kind of sucks that this Kingsguard pack does zilch for the white book agenda.
Or their name is Greg.
Yeah. There you have it, folks. You heard it here. Greg, playing the white book at Worlds. Be ready.
Is Greg going to Worlds?
Yes. Yes, he is. I'm very excited. One thing I would like to see, I don't know if we've ever had anyone do this, but it would be really cool if some of our listeners would chime in their thoughts on the rating of some of these cards. Just go ahead and list the card and then the letter grade that you would give it. And if you've got something that just drastically differs from ours, comment on why. And maybe on the next episode we'll bring it up and we'll see if you can sway our minds. Unless you told us that we're stupid pieces of shit and don't know what we're talking about. Because we've heard that before. And we don't care.
You know, as a pack, this is a really good pack. Even though it's got a handful of pretty weak cards in it, it's just it builds a deck itself. I mean, I think if I had a new player and they were like, well, how do I buy, 1,700 cards? I was like, you know what? Just go buy this pack and a couple of core sets and build a deck with it. Maybe get a couple of King's Landing packs to go with it. And
Have them pick out whatever their favorite house is and then direct them to one of the King's Landing packs that has
it just built a itself card. And it looks, I think it'll be a lot of fun to play. I can't wait to play this deck.
Absolutely. Me too. I think it speaks to the Shaga and everybody, or the Johnny, if you will. You know, you want to see those cool effects go off and you're just there to have a really good time. You don't even necessarily know if you're going to just completely stomp your opponent, but you will know one thing, is that you're going to have a blast with this deck. So
it's going to be a bit of a Rube Goldberg machine, but
I think there's enough.
It'll be pretty sweet.
There's enough synergies between the cards that it doesn't matter which pieces of your Rube Goldberg machine you get out, it'll still work. I mean, you want to get your Barristan and your Jamie and your Boris, but if you are missing one of those pieces, it'll still operate.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, the deck will pretty much always do something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially if you're backing it up with some of the King's Landing control shadow stuff.
I can't wait to see it out of Lanny. I mean, I can't wait to see it out of every house. Like, it's going to be fun. It's going to be super fun. It's going to be hard to not go to Worlds with it. Like... that'd be so much fun.
That does worry me. I wonder how many people are going to want to jump on this.
And the King's Law.
It's new.
King's Law is going to be everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was already running King's Law in a bunch of different decks because I want to, where I have that slot, I want to be able to almost guarantee I win initiative sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Came in handy when I ran up against the Tunnels deck at Gen Con. But it's going to be everywhere now. If you're not running this deck, you're running King's Law.
Yeah. One thing I will point out is that, unfortunately, this isn't going to bring back your Barristan Selmy. he's kind of a big deal for the deck. Unfortunately, homeboy doesn't have a Shadow's Crest.
See who is stronger will bring him back.
Aw, yeah.
And I love that card.
We have ways! It's going to be fun. I am really glad that this archetype, if you will, whatever you want to call it, has come out. I think the game needed something fresh and kind of fun. That I mean, I don't think it's going to be broken, but maybe I'm wrong. But it's nice to see a pretty serious theme since I don't think I've seen anything really this strong since the Maesters cycle.
Well, my very first regional tournament deck a couple of years ago was a Lanny Shadows, City of Shadows deck, and I loved it. And I've always liked Shadows, and it's I'm so glad that they gave us a pack that make that kind of brings it right back up to the front and makes it something worth trying to play around with again, because it's been a while.
Yeah, I love Shadows too. Big Shadows fan. So
I'm still trying to figure out a way to make Guided by Quake worth playing.
Well, do you got a Kingsguard or a Queensguard without a Shadow Crest? Nah, you can give them one, basically. Well, you can put them in Shadows. Seems like a terrible choice.
Yeah, I'm not going there, I think.
So that was the full review of the third pack of the King's Road Cycle. If you agree, disagree, think we're brilliant, think we're stupid, you can definitely let us know at the Facebook page, through an email, or on the Card Game DB post. We're always more than happy to hear your thoughts.
Or you can text me.
Dear, I'm going to post your number on the internet now.
Don't do that. God. I need to... Is there a way to get maybe a Google Voice account or something? Something I can turn off
whenever I'm
sleeping or something. Maybe I'll do that. We'll make a text Daryl segment.
I love it. In fact, if we can have listeners live text you while
we record. Well, you know what I was thinking is one of these days we got to do a Twitch stream or something, like a live stream of the show, a live recording or something. Then we can have people chime in. That would be really fun.
I think that would be a blast. I would like to do that before the end of the year. Maybe we can get that knocked out in sometime here after Worlds. You said you're gonna be experimenting with Twitch for maybe a stream that you're gonna do, right? So
yes,
yeah. So kind of figure out some of what's going on there, so we can knock that out before the end of the year.
Yeah, it would be super fun. So
all right, and finishing up our 6 week long series of segments. Breaking down each house, leading up to Worlds, finishing up with Martell, and our good friend and guest host, Dodd, is going to help us talk a little bit about what you might see out of the House of the Sun.
Well, before I say anything about Martell or any other house, I guess I should say that everybody who listens to me talk about cards should be aware that I don't seem to do very well in Thrones tournaments, so the grain of salt, maybe a salt lick, but...
No.
I do like playing Martell. I've always been a control player. I've played Magic. My favorite deck were permission decks, blue, white. You know, you can do what you want to do, only if I say you can.
Oh, yeah. You know, it does make sense that you'd be an Azorius player. You are a lawyer, after all.
I am a lawyer. But I'm not defined by my work. Believe me, my partner would tell you that that's definitely the case. So when I first started playing Thrones, I was drawn to Lannister and Martell, and probably Greyjoy would be third because I do love me some choke. But Martell, you know, I play a lot here with my friend Leon, and he loves him some Much and More. He had Much and More in just about every deck for the last year, and playing against a Martell deck of mine, every time he plays it, he's like, "I don't want to give you any of that stuff." I'm like, "Well, it's because with Martell, there's nothing but good cards in the deck. And I can always use whatever you're showing me, no matter what it is, even if it's just a Summer Sea."
Mm-hmm.
And so with Martell, it's not only the easiest house to take to find 60 good cards to put in the deck, it's also the hardest one because you got to get it down to 60 cards. And And there's three or four different ways to play it. And at Gen Con, I was running Bleeds and just having a blast. Missed the cut by strength of schedule. I have a name for my pain, and it's Rings.
Wow.
Welcome to my world.
Guest host.
Back when I played a control Martell deck, Rings totally crushed me, too. Crushed my dreams.
Grudge match.
Just one card.
And I can so hear that in his voice.
I know.
Well, mine went the other way. I listened to the episode last week, and he was my first round opponent, and I was like, "Oh, Rings, great, a former world champion." I said, "Well, thank you for the strength of schedule you're going to give me later." And he said, "Oh, don't it be like that." And then he said something last week about, you know, scooping or something, and he did that in our game. I didn't really think it was out of control either way, but like in plot six, he calls it thinking his house divided, and he went, I concede. I can't come back now. And I was like, really? He goes, yeah. And he said he wasn't really, you know, he'd been out for a while and he wasn't really into it, whatever. And then, so apparently, third round, he was winning his game. He'd won his second round game. And they came over and said they had a spot for him off the waiting list for the Star Wars Second Chance Tournament. So he conceded that game and went to play Star Wars. And I fell 10 points short on strength of schedule making the cut. So I was giving him a good-natured, this is all good-natured, ration of shit about it later. And he goes, yeah, well, the funny thing is that I was 2-1 in Star Wars and I was hungry, so I dropped. And so, okay, now I'm mad at you.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, I can't blame him. I went 4-2.
And it's just, I'm thinking of rings. You win a certain number of world championships and you don't care anymore. You don't have to play out tournaments. You can just drop to go eat. It's crazy.
Well, yeah, and I think for rings, you know, it's more about fun until, well, I think even in the world championship, it's still about fun, but I think Gen Con, I think everybody's kind of like, eh, well, it's not the world championship, so it's all good.
Yeah.
It's fun to tell that story, but it's my fault. I made a mistake in one round, and I went 4-2, and if I'd made 5, I'd have made the cut. So it's not really Rings' fault. It's just more fun to blame him.
Look at that. 4-2 at Gen Con, and we got to take your opinion of Martell with a grain of salt. That's good stuff, man.
Well, thank you for saying so, but I have never made a cut in a regional. And I played in 7 of them this year.
Wow. 7 Thrones regionals, or are you counting Netrunner?
No,
as well.
I played in 3 Netrunner regionals and 2 Star Wars regionals as well. And I made
I forgot you did Star Wars.
I made a cut in a Star Wars regional, which I was only playing because I told the store owner I would.
Maybe you're in the wrong game, man.
Maybe. I played like 18 times, including the game at Worlds last year from the designer. But no, I took the Dark Knowledge challenge and I played 7 regionals. I played all 6 houses. And Martell was, I played Long Voyage Martell in the last regional I played in. And again, missed the cut on strength of schedule, but that's, I haven't switched away from Martell at all since then. I haven't done as much deck building, although I did very recently build a new choke deck just to try out some of the new Greyjoy cards. But I think I'll probably be playing Martell next week.
Seems like they're a pretty good house. I mean, Martell Quinton won Gen Con.
Well, and there's an excellent example of, they just took 60 really good cards and put them in a deck, and it didn't even need an agenda to be great.
That's very true.
Yeah.
I mean, I have not played their build, because I'm not even sure I've found a deck list of the one they were running, but I've seen, you know, some that were near approximations of what I expect they were running, maybe 1 or 2 cards different, and so it's like, yep, they're all good.
Yeah.
How'd you get it down to 60? That's the hard question.
That's a hard question for me, no matter what house or deck I'm playing.
Fair enough.
But I have played against both Brett and Daryl playing what I'm sure were very similar decks. And they definitely looked very solid.
Yeah. And, I mean, losing Man City Walls, I think, does hurt that deck a little bit. Because a big part of their advantage is being able to drop the Viper's Banner into play. You know, take advantage of that 2 claim, fill up your hands more. Without that, yeah. I mean, I think it's still probably a pretty good deck, and I'm sure you'll see Jim got it while
Yeah, Worlds. Those decks can definitely still cast the Viper's Bannerman.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they weren't dependent on that, you know, like, first turn for a beatdown or anything. I mean, between the two of you guys, I probably played against that deck, 5 or 6 times a couple weeks ago?
Yeah.
And I don't remember that happening in the first or second turn in any of those games. So I don't know. Maybe there's something to be said for refilling your hand a little later, but I think that 2 claim beatdown is probably bigger early. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. Well, you know, the thing about Martell's, all their cards do something. Like, all their chets do something. They serve a purpose. They're not just there. You know, they get you card advantage, or they're incredibly efficient, like the Lost Spearman. Yeah, thank you. You know? It's a great house.
What's that?
Lost Spearman has lost a step because so many people are running Influence now. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, you know, I haven't seen that much more Influence down here in our meta, at least. But we are frequently a little different.
I found late in the with that Long Voyage deck that I that did, of course, have three of them in it, that at least a third of the time I was using my Lost Spearmen to kneel out their influence.
I mean, that's something you said about doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is not necessarily a point against the Lost Spearmen.
Exactly.
Just an extra way to use them.
Exactly. Sometimes after somebody plays a Lost Spearmen and you got that influence, you're like, ah, God, do I want to really kneel this? I mean, especially for the Targaryen players running a lot of ambush and or burn. I mean, come on. So, got
to
hand it.
I get tiresome paying one gold to kneel a location, pay a gold to kneel a location, pay a gold to kneel a location. Okay, exactly. So I'll let you keep it now. And I'm
like, oh, exactly.
I wonder if he's...
Exactly. There's already a... oh, God, what's his name? A Theon that you pay a gold to kneel a location. So come on, you're doing it right.
Mm-hmm. And with him, you get to choose.
That's true. That is true.
I'd pay one gold to kneel a Pintoshi Manor all day long, but...
Saturday
in the summer sea.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, you
never
can
know.
Play around with the psychological aspect of... when you're trying to play your spearman and how much you want him in play. For instance, if I don't care about him, he's probably going to be one of the last cards I play that turn. And I'm just feeling fine using up that extra gold. But if I play him early in the turn, you know, maybe I'm just kind of daring you to see how much of your influence you'll kneel out.
Yeah, for me, the Lost Spearman's always one of the first cards I play just to see how much they contemplate kneeling that influence, just to know what exactly they're trying to do, you know, what their plans are for that. So he's got some utility in and of itself, something that I mean I don't know how much it was thought of in the design of that card or what, but damn, he's good.
Yeah,
he does have the refugee trait though,
as he does,
which is sort of negative.
Sort of. Not nearly as much now that the others are restricted, which means I think that definitely knocked down the amount of... shoot, now I can't think of the event name.
Dissension.
Dissension.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I haven't seen those in quite a while.
How great would that be? Someone like Neil's so much influence, you keep returning them to your hand, and then you finally get to play them, they're like, Dissension. You're like, ah, shit. That would only happen to me.
Yeah.
So going more into Martell, what do you think their best deck is right now?
You know, when you asked me to do this, I was giving some thought to that subject, and I think in terms of what I see a lot of people doing is fighting the last war when they get to a big tournament. So I think we're going to see a bunch of decks built to try to beat Quentin, and I think Quentin will not be the deck that will be the Martell deck. I'm not sure which one will be. I suspect that the Bleeds deck is going to be hurt a lot by the last pack. I forget which card it was I saw that I thought we're going to see a lot of that would be really bad for Bleeds. What was in that pack? Somebody talk while I think.
Well,
I'm not really sure.
Go look.
That would hurt that Bleeds deck. I mean, that Bleeds deck obviously is all about wiping the board. I'm not really sure what could have come out in the last pack that could have really been a big deal for that, unless it was something that canceled some events, because that, you know, relies pretty heavily on its events, which are really hard to cancel since they're all any phases.
Oh, or I think Dominance Song of Ice is Song of Ice would be really bad for it.
I think a lot of
people playing it, and when I played it, I usually had 10 to 15 cards in my hand, and I wanted to have that big hand, so I've got all those options available because it was 21 events in the deck, and if I can't stockpile them, the deck will sputter.
Yeah, only having four options makes it hard to plan for all the eventualities that Martell Control likes to usually be able to handle.
Right. And I think we'll be seeing a lot of that one. I'm not so sure about Song of Fire.
I've been playing around with Song of Fire lately, and I have to say it looks like it has a lot of potential. I don't think I've found quite the right build yet, but there's some really sweet looking stuff.
I don't know about a lot of potential yet.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just too excited about the shield bearer and ways to go get it and ways to use it over and over and over. But that does seem awfully strong. And the old summer cards haven't really gone down in effectiveness.
Oh, sure. But getting back to Martell. No,
I'm digging you on the shield bearer. I want that guy to be so good because that's exactly what I'm talking about when I talk about permission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dear Lord.
So I've noticed in testing there are several triggers floating around that can, you know, fairly easily eat that up, eat up the three that he cancels. One I ran into while playing against Greg turned out to be two carrion birds that he played and then triggered to shuffle themselves back into the deck to eat up the first two. And I forget what he triggered for the third, something that just didn't matter that much, so that he could then actually trigger his fourth, which was what he really wanted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, also Val destroys birds.
What's that?
He attacked with two carrion birds and tried to trigger both responses to chew them up.
Yeah, but they cannot be canceled.
Ah.
Yeah, so it still counts as the first two triggers, mm-hmm. but they couldn't be canceled. So. Yeah.
Similar like Siege of Winterfell, we'll eat up one of the Shieldbearer cancels, but yeah. Not be canceled.
Exactly.
Also cards like Corset Khal Drogo and Lords of Winter, Catelyn Stark. You can just trigger them three times right in quick succession. And then play them.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's certain situations where it's bad, but I do still see potential in being able to reuse it. Like
I do also dig the Shield Bearer.
He's neat.
But I think the biggest problem, if we're segueing here into a Martell Summer discussion, I think the biggest problem with Martell Summer is that it really feels like it needs to run Kings of Fire right now. Sorry. Song of Fire. I'm trying to combine agenda names here. Rather than Kings of Summer. And frankly, Martell just doesn't have much draw.
What?
They have a lot of card advantage. Most of it doesn't say the word draw.
Right.
Which then leads to kind of an awkward interaction with the Song of Fire agenda where it doesn't feel like you're really getting much use out of it, but you need it in order to more reliably keep it the season.
Right, because not only is the other one restricted, but it doesn't have the word season on it.
Right, yeah, so you're doubly screwed if you're trying to go with Kings of Summer, which is unfortunate because Martell could use the actual draw more.
So running Song of Fire, as often as not, you're going to be giving your opponent benefit unless you want to go out of house for a card like Pyromancer's Cache.
Right, which is not unreasonable. Or if you want to skew it into a Shadows direction now, which is what I was kind of thinking about with Jamie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't want to give up all those really good restricted cards that Martell has its house mm-hmm. emblem on to play Pyromancer's Cache just to be able to run Song of Fire.
Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised to see some folks that have had a little more time than myself to really work on that Martell Summer bring something pretty slick to Worlds.
All right, I'm gonna move the conversation back towards the bleed style deck that I was talking about earlier. I don't know how fully we really covered that with Martell Knights of the Hollow Hill. I mean, Don, do you think Song of Ice is really going to hurt that deck so much that you don't think it's going to see much play?
Well, I think if you actually try to, again, we're always fighting the last war, but if you really think, okay, what's going to be at Worlds? I think people like the new hotness. Song of Fire is clearly very good, and if you can't figure out a way to get rid of the White Raven and turn off Winter, yes, it's going to hose Bleeds really hard. I mean, you're going to have to run Ill Tidings just to protect yourself from it and hope you get it.
Well, you can search for it if you want to blow a plot slot.
True.
But you mentioned people jumping on the new hotness. You know what also is going to be new hotness that probably is going to subtly hurt it? The big influx of Shadows cards again, where they can more safely sit in Shadows away from something like Bleeds.
Yeah, true. Shadows can be nasty.
You think I'm going to play it in the dominance phase because I've kept four influence back, then trigger sell me to put them all back in Shadows. Or no, not sell me. Which one?
Greenfield.
Greenfield puts them back in Shadows.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that deck, at least for a while, is probably not. It's going to have too many hard counters in the near future with those two brand new shiny things popping up.
That's fair. And I'm not terribly upset about that. I loathe playing against Martell Control.
Yeah.
I love playing Control so much. I don't know what it is, but...
it's so fun to play as.
So I think if... given the discussion we've just had about the new stuff and stuff that maybe is superseded by it, that it's a very good chance that somebody will come with a very good Martell Summer build. Maybe that's what DC is doing right now. Who knows? And awesome. That it'll do well.
I mean, Martell is a favorite of theirs, and Martell Summer was super, super strong a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was. It was super.
Yeah, the first time I... First time I met Dennis was at the Tennessee Regional last year, and he was running Martell Summer, and I think he went 4-1. It's a solid deck.
It's definitely still a good deck. I mean, so does it play Gaston Gray. It is a little low on cards that actually say the word draw on them, but there's a fair amount, especially if you're running like Parting Blows and stuff.
I was going to say, let's be fair, that summer deck was mainly you just did it to get the extra card every turn, and then just Martell's great cards. It wasn't necessarily relying on cards that drew you cards necessarily. It was that extra card every turn. Much the same reason why the Long Voyage was so damn good.
That's fair. I mean, I think people kind of undervalue the place that Mace with the Sun has in Martell Summer decks.
That's just the card I was thinking about. That save every turn can be really nice. And when you're running the Dark Star and suddenly that save turns into being up a character as well, that's some very solid card advantage.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And the idea that you can still get more, you can use, Sleep Bottom Scavenger and then a Parting Blow and get to use it, but that's going to be very limited to the first couple of turns. But
that's true.
I do hate having two of those Flea Bottom Scavengers in my hand at the same time.
Yeah. Just in general, I think Song of Fire is very nice with something like Parting Blow, because when you do kind of get up there in these decks and you're trying to maximize your draw in these control decks, a lot of times you can kind of get overly clumped up if things happen that way. And then you're stuck with something like a Parting Blow, and you're like, I've already hit draw cap. I'd like to kneel that guy, but then I can't draw, and you feel bad. So this kind of gives you the chance to maximize the benefit of the cantrips and kind of secondary draw stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So there is the Dane deck, and I do like theme decks, but it's not tier one. My favorite theme deck ever was House Bolton, just because it was so chaotic in Melee. But there's enough. They built enough synergies into Dane, especially if you get your Dorn out. Or your Starfall out.
Starfall, to
make something that's a lot of fun to play. But I don't see that being something we're going to have to worry about at Worlds, no.
Yeah, no, I've seen that a little bit.
Yeah.
Agree.
Here and there. I mean, and it does give you a little bit of protection. It's burn between the plus strength and the Starfall advisors, I think it is, who get to cancel cards that target Danes. I think those guys are pretty good, along with the extra strength. We'll make it decent against Targ Burn, which
is Burn going to see a swing back up? I think that applies not only to that deck, but to the Quentin deck as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's fairly vulnerable to Burn. Now at Worlds, it did not see much of a resurgence like I expected. Gen Con, it did not see much of a resurgence like I expected. But will it at Worlds?
I don't know.
I see a lot of people saying they think it will, but I don't know. I don't know. I
mean, it's been a good number of tournaments. I've seen a couple tournaments that were won by House of Dreams Dragon Pit.
Ooh, Dragon Pit. Good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's some new cards that might slot right into that nicely.
Yeah, and there are a couple.
Yeah, and one recently unrestricted card that is always still nice for Targ.
Yeah, Aegon's Hill does give a pretty big boon to Targ.
Mm-hmm.
You could say that again.
How excited are you? Off topic, but how excited are you, Brett, that Pentoshi Manor is now unrestricted again?
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it so much. It also a card that, maybe not so much off topic, because it's another card that does potentially go into some burn decks.
Indeed. Indeed.
The restricted card I ran in my Bleeds deck is one that I think is probably overlooked a lot because you've got Viper's Bannerman and is so popular, but I ran Burning on the Sand, and until I actually played with it, I underrated the how powerful that card was.
That card is crazy good.
Oh man, yeah.
Loved it for a long time in Brotherhood, actually.
Yeah. I had a good run with that card back in 2010. Yeah. Good stuff.
I had a really good run with it this summer. I look at the Viper's Bannerman and I get, yeah, this is great, but over here, this is control.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you want? It's my Shadows and Spiders turn. Sorry, no.
Yeah, no challenges for you.
And the only time I ever had a problem with it was when I wanted to trigger something that required me to lose a challenge. Oh, I guess I'll just have to wait till next turn to do that. And we mentioned it earlier, the jiu-jitsu style that Martell plays, that I think it takes a lot more finesse than some other control builds. I mean, Lannister Neal, I guess Rings was right. I mean, they haven't given us much more because it was just so powerful for so long. And
mm-hmm.
it's Neal is so amazing, but you can always give new little subtle ways to take advantage of losing challenges, you know? And so there's every time they give us one, there's like, ooh, there's some little toys I can play over here and create new corner cases, and that using your opponent's strength against them is just so much fun. And I understand why you hate playing against it, Brett, but when you're sitting in there and you're doing it, you're like, ooh, I really hope they attack me militarily so I can kill either of the Quentins I might be playing, either the one that gives me two power or the one that becomes an agenda. Yes, please. Or my very first Martell deck was also my very first Knights. No, it was not Knights of the Hill. My very first Martell deck was Sand Snakes, and I was always like, okay, there's the Red Viper that nobody plays unless they're playing Sand Snakes, so please attack me. I want you to do it. I want to kill my characters. And that's another theme deck that it's just a shame it's not really competitive, because it was also a lot of fun to
play. Yeah, it's always nice to have those cards that make your opponent think differently about a challenge or winning a challenge or even initiating a challenge. That's fun. Yeah. That's fun to turn the game on its head sometimes.
And Martell's by far looking at that. I mean, nobody else really has much of it at all.
Yeah.
And it really can throw your opponent for a loop. Even, you know, it's fairly common to play against Martell and whatever, but it still can kind of force a different game state than against any of the other houses.
Yeah, Red Vengeance will crush your dreams.
Uh-huh.
I've been on the receiving end of that.
It can hurt.
I'll
agree with that.
I always thought that...
Go ahead.
Like I said before about Burning on the Sand, I didn't appreciate its true power until I played it a bunch. And at first, you know, when I first started playing the game and I saw that and I compared the two, I was like, well, why isn't Red Vengeance the one that's restricted? But let's not give them any ideas.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think that card needs restriction.
No, it does not. But just looking at those two cards next to each other until I had a chance to put them both in the same deck, I was like, okay, yeah, I get it now.
Oh, yeah, in the same
completely
deck, yeah.
Completely shutting down a challenge. And then when you get... what's it called? Is it Shores of the Summer Sea that lets you take two and out of your discard pile and shuffle them back?
Yeah.
Yes.
Shores is just amazing. And then my secret tech in my Bleeds deck was two copies of Blessed by the Maiden, which
what the
we just censored it out. His secret tech.
Oh.
I'm sorry, I'm kind of drunk. Go ahead.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry, Dodd. What was your secret attack?
Blessed by the Maiden in because they not only gave me that recursion of, say, my Prince's Plans or my unfortunately dead Red Viper, but they also let me get in the discard pile. And then, like, the single biggest problem that deck had was somebody who had a Baylor Black Tide I couldn't get rid of.
Yeah, he'll pack it in your ass, man.
I had like a 10-plot game against Leon about 3 weeks ago, and my entire game was just getting my events back out of my discard until I could kill that fucker.
Yeah. But, I mean, Shores and the like are really great anti-Baylor tech, and yeah. It turns out Greyjoy's pretty strong, so that makes Shores look a lot better. Of course, it's also a location, which is pretty vulnerable to them.
Yeah, Greyjoy's real good right now.
Alright, so are there any other big Martell deck types or archetypes that we want to talk about? I think we've hit on a lot of the big ones.
I can't think of any.
Yeah, I think I'm good on that front.
We probably gave Quentin short shrift given that it just won Gen Con, but...
Yeah, that's true.
I have played a Quentin deck, and it's just... Pour a bunch of good cards, and then since they gave us those really nice synergies with the Knights that went with Quentin... Mm-hmm. When you get a set of those out, you are really, really strong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they have each other so well. Super efficient characters. Like, those guys just have so much packed onto that body, the ability and the keywords and icons and stuff.
Mm-hmm. No, I definitely agree. Martell Quinton is really strong.
Draws you cards.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. This was a couple weeks ago, it was before the Van Allen City Walls restriction, but my beautiful bride wanted to play some Thrones, and she barely ever wants to play Thrones because she hates the game. But she hasn't played a lot of Thrones in the past, but that's not to say she's not bad at card games. She beats me at Cthulhu more often than I beat her, but she's really not particularly great at Thrones, but she played my Martell Quinton deck against my Lanny Kevin deck, and she obliterated me. Like 15-0 obliterated me.
Good lord.
Wowza.
Yeah.
Well, Quentin...
Both my losses at Gen Con with Lannister. One was Kevin and the other was Tunnels.
Mercy.
Yeah, so Martell Quinton is not to be ignored.
Oh, no. No, I was wrong once.
Yeah, absolutely.
There will definitely be some people playing it. You need to prepare for it, but I think there'll also be some people who have teched against it more than it needs to be.
I don't agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the standard thing. Like after Worlds last year, we had, you know, that big influx of House of Pain decks for months afterwards. Mm-hmm. So I think it'll probably be a pretty similar effect.
More than likely. All right. Any last thoughts on Martell before we end it?
Well, we did... Well, I would like to... Go ahead.
Go ahead.
We're both too kind.
Having had the advantage of her having listened to you do this 5 times before, I went ahead and looked at every Martell card and picked 5, I think, are underplayed because you asked everybody else for that.
Oh, excellent.
That's exactly what I was going to
Hell
do.
Hell yes.
And as promised, I will do the one I think has been underplayed up to now, but I think we'll be seeing a good deal more of it because it fits the new builds that we're going to see out of the last 2 packs, and that is Shadow of the South.
Yes, sir.
Ooh.
Is that the one you were thinking of? I was thinking of.
Very nice.
I hate that card.
Yeah, fuck that card.
Yeah,
hate it.
The aforementioned playing against it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, the aforementioned, I don't know if we were recording at the time, but I did play against a House Dane deck in a regional this year, and this card was a central aspect of his deck, and it brutalized me. For those who don't know offhand, it is a Shadows card event that when it comes out of Shadows, your opponent cannot play any events for the entire phase, and then if it's Summer, it goes back to your hand so you can repeat it next turn. And it's 0 cost, so you can do it in any phase. And so you pay two to put it down, and it's absolutely worth two gold to shut down an opponent who's running events. Now, if you get against an opponent who's not running a lot of events, then it's not going to be – it's a dead card or just sits in shadows and gives you whatever effects you get from having cards in shadows. But it could destroy a siege deck. Oh, you know, play at the beginning of the plot phase. It's the first action of the game, and they don't get to play their epic battles.
Yep.
What are they going to do? They need to get those on the first couple of turns. And, and then, you know, a bleeds deck. You could
well.
I'll just bring
that's
up
just what
well, I think they can about. Play those. Can't they play those pre-plot though? Those epic battles.
No, but you do it at the beginning of the plot phase. You put it in shadows and setup.
Oh
bring it
yeah,
out as the first action. Of the game.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah. I hadn't thought of that.
And then that one won't go back to your hand because you haven't had a chance to make it summer yet. But you got plenty of ways to get stuff out of your discard pile in Martell. So yeah, I think we'll be seeing more of this card because of summer and because of shadows, it fits both perfectly, and you don't even have to make it summer for it to be worth playing, but it's definitely better if you do.
And Stark Murder becoming a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we'll be seeing that card a fair amount. My next one is one that Greg clued me into that I'd always overlooked when he was giving me some tips on building my Long Voyage deck, and that is the Bastard of God's Grace.
I love that guy.
Oh man, I don't know if he's underplayed. He's the shit.
Yeah, I play him in every Martell deck I build.
Yeah, man, he's great.
I heard that. Quentin. Or maybe fourth.
Oh, yeah, that guy is huge.
What's he fourth?
Oh, I was saying that I third or fourth that opinion, depending on how you're looking at it. That he's actually quite good.
Incredible.
You see it so much packing just a little tiny body.
What's that little
little tiny mustache body?
What's that little weenie that what's that little Dothraki weenie that?
The Dothraki Handmaiden.
Plus two that only has an intrigue icon.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Dothraki Handmaiden.
I played against one of those builds and she was a pain in my butt. Well, this guy does the same thing. Plus two to a Martell character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe draws you a card.
His only drawback is he's unique, but that means you can protect him from getting this.
Yep.
And he does this combo well with Quentin, like Daryl said.
Oh, yeah.
So the Dothraki Handmaid was a pain in the ass. And Bastard gives you the same effect. Any Martell card you play, plus two, and then of course he does draw you a card if you trigger him during the epic phase, but that's not really his attractiveness. And then his big drawback is he's unique, but then you just protect him from being killed. So that's my second underplayed card, I think. I'm interested that you guys see him, but then again, it was Greg who tripped me over to looking at him again, so maybe that's your meta. I don't see him anywhere. I haven't seen him anywhere else. All right, my next one may be a little bit of a surprise, but since it has to compete with a couple of really good other alternatives, I think Venomous Blade doesn't get enough credit and is therefore underplayed.
Yeah, not since it was restricted. That's before then, it was all over the fucking place.
Yeah,
for sure. It's very good. You know what's I continued to play it. It was still my go-to restricted for a long time until probably the Orphan restriction started making me kind of wonder about things. But you know what really is its biggest detractor right now, I think? The restriction of the refugees. Mm-hmm. That was one of the most common targets. You could almost be assured there would be some kind of target around for the Venomous Blade. Now it's a little more iffy.
Well, that was my restricted card in my Long Voyage deck, and that was, again, Greg gave me some suggestions on building that deck, and he suggested I go to that one and then use the plot to make sure I'd be able to see it.
Mm-hmm.
So I ran Spending the Winter Stores, because, of course, if you're running 85 cards, it's hard to have a card in your draw deck that you can't guarantee you're going to see. And that worked out really well. That was a good combo. And then I didn't have to run, you know, Search and Detain, which didn't really fit the deck very well or something like that.
Right.
Inferior winners wouldn't have.
And your opponent was probably not getting an attachment from your own plot either, were they?
It didn't happen very often. And if they did, it was something. I mean, I never gave anybody like a taste for blood that I didn't want them to have.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there was. I think retachments are slowly coming back, but
Thank now, the God. TV
has been restricted, but it hadn't happened yet. Back in back at that point, they weren't in every deck in it yet, still. All right, so my next one is Sunspear Tourney Grounds.
Yeah, I think that has kind of fallen out of favor.
Absolutely, it has. This is not good.
It's.
If you've lost a challenge this phase, which is going to happen with Martell, Neil Sunspear Tourney Grounds to cancel a triggered character ability, a character ability, or the effects of an event card triggered instead if you control more unique characters in each opponent, which isn't a terribly difficult standard to meet. Now, this is not a card that makes a lot of my cuts either, but that's a pretty solid effect. I mean, I get three uniques out and I've wiped your board, and I can cancel just about anything you want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even without having more uniques, you know what it does cancel?
What?
Wintertime Marauders.
Yeah. I mean, trust me, I love the effect of the card, too. Don't get me wrong. It's just, it's never made my cuts. It's gotten close a couple of times in a couple of, like, uber cancel decks, but in the end it's just like, I gotta lose a challenge. Come on. It's the only tourney grounds where you have to lose a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
But you're playing Martell. You're going to lose challenges. You want to lose challenges.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess that counts
I just read Vengeance to you, and now I'm going to cancel something you do.
Does this specifically say you have to just lose a challenge, or do you have to lose a challenge as the defender?
You have to lose a challenge this phase.
Just lose one? Okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe I should really look at that.
Yeah. It's still, I think, shows that initiative is very important. You probably do still want your opponent going first, so you lose a challenge there, because you probably still want to win your own challenges. And you don't.
Well, I ran two copies of Lady Jenna in my Long Voyage deck just to make sure I could lose challenges as the attacker.
Hmm. Interesting.
I really liked that.
I could see that.
When I got to do it. Didn't get her out, but a couple of times in the tournament, but she cost 5, yeah. But I got a lot of weenie intrigue icons and knelt, and then got what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, that was not, the most amazing thing I ever thought of, but I was pretty happy with it when I did get to do it. But anyway, I'm going to be losing challenges as Martell. I'm often going to be going second as Martell, and so this card, I think, deserves another look.
Yeah.
And my last one is the Red Viper, the one that you put gold on and stand in.
Oh, God, I'm in love with you. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
He is so good. So good.
Yes.
He has to compete with the second best card in the game.
Oh, yeah. Prince of the Sun? Yeah.
I hate to agree with you.
Yeah.
But, I mean, because Greg and Daryl were on me for so long about this Viper, and then I finally played him in my Long Voyage deck.
And he's amazing.
Back
he's
at
so
our
good.
And
he's
I was so like, good. Holy shit, this is good.
He is so good, not to mention he probably has the best art in the game.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. You don't play a card because of the art on it, but man, it's so good. And he has a war crest. He's a tricon. He has stealth and renown. Like, he's so sexy. If the Prince of the Sun Red Viper didn't exist, this Red Viper, oh my God,
top 5 card.
Absolutely. But in the style that Martell plays, a lot of the time the Prince of the Sun Red Viper is going to make that cut, but this Red Viper is so good. I piggybacked on this guy in Melee last year at Gen Con, and holy shit. Oh, he's so good. Dude. He's so good.
Stealth plus renown is just for blood on him. Good.
Oh, Taste for Blood, hell yes. Absolutely. And I was kind of afraid whenever Dragonscale came out, and I was like, oh, man. But then nobody played Dragonscale, so Grayscale. Yeah, that's right. Sorry. Even more of a reason to play him. Super good. Good call on that, Dodd. That's a great card.
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree. He is very underplayed because, like you said, Princess of the Rapper is probably the second best card in the game.
Yeah.
Second only to Mira herself.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or, I think the Prince of the Sun Red Viper could get in there, at least in the top 3.
That's what we're talking about.
Oh, I knew that. Oh, God. It starts!
All right, any other last-minute thoughts about the House of the Sun?
I just want to throw in one other, I think, underplayed card. That's going to be Words Are Like Arrows. Sure, it's no Red Vengeance, but I think it complements it very well.
Yeah, that was on my 10 that I narrowed down.
Mm-hmm. It's nice. You can trigger it off of losing on offense as well, which is a really fun trick for people. They really tend to forget about that. Doesn't care if there's attachments on the character. Great way to reset power on some kind of uber character. It's just, I think, pretty versatile. And if you're already looking for two influence for an effect like Red Vengeance, I think Words Are Like Arrows slots in very well.
I probably agree.
That was on my, the 10, 11 cards that I narrowed down to 5.
I'll tell you what's not a good card, to be a Viper.
Yeah. Not
really.
Yeah, it's not really that great.
The other two Bs are pretty good. That one's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this one's probably the worst.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's no Unbent or Unbowed Unbroken or whatever.
Well, that at least kind of has some combo potential if you want to fill up your whole discard pile. To be a Viper is just a really weak, really weak control effect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anywho.
All right. Now, any last minute thoughts about Martell?
Oh, yeah, one more. What's it called? The event that just came out, the spear.
Choosing the spear.
Choosing the spear is the balls.
Oh, choosing the spear is a much better to be a Viper, actually.
Yes.
Seriously. Like, choosing the spear is balls deep in victory. That is a great card.
Single-handedly won me 2 games in
January. Exactly. And we were talking about it earlier, how Stand is so good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, this is Stand and a significant strength boost with Melee. Like, come on.
Daryl, I need you to build a deck. I need you to build a deck with To Be a Viper and Choosing the Spear for me.
To Be a Viper. I will try. After Worlds.
Okay.
When we can have fun again.
Sounds good.
Props and Slops.
All right, can I be the one that says it?
Sure.
Props to Arkham Origins. It's really fun.
I haven't gotten to play it yet. No spoilers, please.
It's really good.
Yeah, I don't think I've gotten far enough in it yet to have anything that is a spoiler. I don't know anything that wasn't already advertised in videos.
Yeah. That's a good one.
It's sweet.
Yeah, I'm only like 4 hours in. I haven't had a lot of time to play. I'm hopefully going to get some time in tomorrow morning.
Yeah. What percent are you?
I want it like 8 or 9.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm real low.
Then we're probably right at the same, pretty darn close to the same point. I am at 9% when I looked earlier tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. I have a prop. My prop is to the television show Arrow.
Oh my God, that was a prop.
Well done.
I've just started watching this, Rob, and I decided, what the hell? Why not? It's all over every website ever, and everyone's talking about it, so we'll give it a shot. And holy shit, this guy kills people. Like, oh my God, I've only seen the first, like, 2 episodes. He's killed so many people. Like, and at the same time, I'm thinking, like, I don't even know if he should have killed some of these people.
Like, I know, right?
Like, come on.
Like, Harry Dresden is probably right.
Yeah.
This man needs arrested.
Like, I'm serious. Like, I don't understand. So, obviously, you know, we haven't figured out all the story in the first 2 episodes. But, you know, this is nice. This is a nice change. I thought it was going to be very similar to Smallville. Or something very, very cheesy, a guilty pleasure. And to be honest, the acting is not very good, in my personal opinion. But it's still, I mean, it's still enjoyable. And the action scenes and the parkour, jumping around
that
action
way
scenes.
Way better than I expected.
It is very well done.
Yeah.
It is very well done.
You could tell, I think, they decided to take a page from the more serious tone of, like, the Christopher Nolan Batman's.
Yeah,
it's not up
say,
to that level, But you can tell that...
Exactly.
Like, when they got done with Smallville, they're like, what do we do next? They're like, these super serious Batman films were popular.
Yep.
Let's go more that direction.
Exactly. And he acts very similar to how, like, Bruce Wayne acts like he's, like, a dick and doesn't care type thing. And that, you know, that's kind of the way he portrays himself whenever he's not being the Green Arrow. And it had some really cool Easter eggs with, like, the Deathstroke mask showing up in the very beginning and stuff. And I don't know. I don't know what else is happening. It's, you know, like I said, I'm on the third episode. Haven't seen it yet. But it's really good for just a television show where obviously they can't do a ton of crazy violence things or whatever. But it honestly has enough violence for me. Like, that's fine. I don't know if I could handle more, really. So
yeah. It's based on fact.
What fact?
Go on, Brett.
No, I was gonna say it's very, very good. Alicia and I just started watching season two tonight, so
cool.
I am very much a fan.
Based on the fact that your co-host propped the hell out of it last week, I have added that to my list, but I haven't started watching it yet. But if based on what you just said, I think I will make a recommendation to you all that you all watch Orphan Black.
Oh, that is, I think, in my Netflix queue.
Orphan Black.
It's on Netflix.
What is that?
I remember hearing about it, at least, if nothing else.
I've not heard of that.
Orphan Black, this sort of street urchin, streetwise girl, witnesses a murder, and the girl looks exactly like her, and so she takes over her life. And then things start getting strange.
All right, I'll check it out.
And she even manages to...
God?
I have a prop. Yes?
Oh, I heard, and she even manages, and then you cut out.
Yeah, so repeat that for us.
She even manages to fool the girl's boyfriend.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, I'll check that out.
Yeah. It's one of those, like, 10-episode... My prop is to a book I finished last night. I've read about 30 new books this year, including the first two King Killer books.
Oh, yeah.
And this one is second only to them in how much I loved it, and it's called Ready Player One.
Oh, I've heard of this. Yeah.
What is it?
My friend Andy, it's called Ready Player One. My friend Andy gave me a copy of it. Now, I'm a child of the 80s, so it is right in my wheelhouse, but the whole book is this just fantastic homage to the 80s in an exciting fantasy sci-fi story, and I just devoured it in about 3 days, which for me is pretty fast, considering that I also did a bunch of other stuff in those 3 days, and I cannot recommend it highly enough, and apparently it's already been optioned for a movie.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So, Ready Player One. Go
That's
get
a great
it, read
prop.
It. I love it.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah, I also have a prop, and it's to The Walking Dead Season 2 being announced today.
Oh, the
game. Oh, okay, I was like, what the hell?
Nice.
Yeah, so I'm super excited. It takes place a couple years after the first one. You actually play as Clementine.
That reminds me that I actually finally finished season one last week on my birthday. That was part of what I did, was I sat around and finally played episode 5.
Nice.
It was a brutal ending.
Yes, it was.
I need to play those games.
Yes, you do.
Very nice.
All right, anyone else? Props or slops?
I'm going to throw out some props, Brett. I think you'll appreciate this one. To your wife, who spent like 3 hours with me and Kristen on Sunday doing this badass like superhero cosplay photo shoot, because we went as Green Arrow and Black Canary for some Halloween festivities over the weekend. So we reused those costumes for some photos, and she's worked on a few of them now, like 4 or 5.
Oh, is that who you were?
Sent some previews our way, and they look pretty badass.
Oh, shit. I thought you guys were just Robin Hood and Madonna. Damn.
It's a common misconception. Robin, your girlfriend Robin, that is, actually commented that Kristen could be Lady Gaga.
Mm.
Yeah. Absolutely, I can see that.
Also, Robin went as Robin, the boy.
Indeed.
Did you go as Batman?
I went as a black dude in a leather jacket. So I was Luke Cage.
Cool. I went as guy throwing up all night.
Number one.
Yeah.
Guy throwing up number one.
Were you wearing a red shirt?
Me or him?
Yes.
I was not wearing a red shirt, if that question was directed towards me.
I thought Luke Cage wore a yellow shirt.
You know, I'm not a big enough Luke Cage fan to know offhand.
Of course you're not. Luke Cage, you don't like any black superheroes.
Whoa, what are you talking about? Mr. Terrific is awesome.
Who the fuck is that?
DC superhero who's awesome.
Alright. Mr. Terrific.
Yep.
Can't be Mr. Fantastic, huh? Is already taken?
Yes, actually.
Oh.
Okay. Actually, so is Mr. Terrific. There was a golden age superhero by that name.
Anyways.
The current one's DC. Yeah.
I also have another prop. Minus two, the Hearthstone beta.
Rubbing
which I in. Yeah, that's right. Which I got. Everyone should get one who applied at this point. But
I haven't got mine yet. But I just applied like last Friday. Yeah.
Well, I'm Daryl fucking Lloyd, so you know. It is. It's. I mean, it's pretty simple. It's basically a dumbed down version of the WoW card game. It's pretty fun. It's kind of. I don't want to call it mindless. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I feel like it's a little more in depth than Soulforge, perhaps, but it's along the same lines.
Well, I love Soulforge, so
yeah, Soulforge is fun. So, it's pretty basic, if you will. I mean, everything's done on your turn. There's no instances that you cast on your opponent's turn or anything like that. But it's pretty fun. Very similar to playing almost like Commander or something like that in Magic. Or Hand of the King, if you play Game of Thrones, where you're basically trying to destroy the opposing hero.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe it's more towards Magic. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what the World of Warcraft card game always was, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, it's fun. But I have enjoyed my time with it. So, games are relatively quick, which I thoroughly enjoy. So,
that's good.
I have my fingers crossed that there's going to be a mobile version, but I'm not really banking on it, but I hope so.
I don't really have any other props or slops, so.
Someone I have a slop.
Okay, let's hear it.
The League. I can't believe I'm doing this, but
whoa.
You guys first tripped to this about a year ago. Now, let me finish. And I loved it, but late last season and into early part of this season, they went from being mean-spirited but funny to being downright cruel, and it got uncomfortable for a while. I mean, it's gotten a little lighter since, but I was actually almost to the point of not watching the show anymore because it had gone it's such a dark place. Like, ever since Jenny actually joined the League and she stopped being the person that kind of leveled everybody out.
And Jenny's a monster.
I mean, there's nothing you can do to Ruxin that's not going to be funny, no matter how bad it is, but that whole thing with Andre that crossed over from the end of the season to the beginning was just – it was like the British Office, which I stopped watching after three episodes because it just made me feel bad.
Oh, but we're almost done.
Yeah, I know, and I didn't care. I was so unpleasant. I found it so unpleasant I didn't finish, but even though I've watched half of it, I think. But it's the last couple, three episodes have kind of brought it back up to a more – but. Yeah, it was touch and go there for a bit. So I hope they find a better place to be than just constant, unremitting cruelty.
What did they do to Andre that's so bad that I can't think of?
The whole thing with his engagement was everything about this was worse and worse and worse. Mm.
That's fair.
And then I thought, okay, they're going to come back because Pete was actually like being real nice to him for an episode or so after that happened, and then Pete just went right back to being mean. But now they've gotten back to the a more like the first couple of seasons level, and it's I'm okay again.
Okay. But
it was bad for a while.
Fair enough.
They went
too
far.
I can respect that.
All right. Anyone have anything else?
I'm good.
Nope.
Well, thanks for listening to another fine episode of Two Champs, One Jump.
Absolutely.
We will not have an episode next week, as everyone on the show currently will be at Worlds.
Yes. So get there.
Yes.
Indeed. It's going to be a blast.
Get there and Also, for anyone who is interested, follow Dodd on Twitter. I can't remember his Twitter handle, but you should do it. Dodd, what's your Twitter handle?
It's AMUK3, but you really should only follow my Twitter feed if you like libertarianism.
I mean, I love libertarianism.
I follow him, and I don't even know what that word means. Probably something to do with politics, but do it anyways. Yeah. It's fun.
All right. And again, yes, thank you, Dodd, for joining us on the show.
Thank you for having me. I had a blast.
We're always more than happy to have you.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming on.
I look forward to seeing all of you next week.
Absolutely.
We're going to get drunk.
And we hope to see all of you fine, very attractive and handsome listeners at the Worlds. I'm not just saying that to bribe.
Or to make you hard.
It's entirely to bribe drinks out of you.
Yes, buy us drinks. You should do that.
Hey, we do have a listener who said he's going to buy us drinks.
True, I didn't see that.
I can't wait. I'm excited. Thank you.
Well, yes, we will see hopefully all of you next week. Otherwise, tune in the week afterwards for what will almost definitely be our Worlds recap episode.
Indeed.
O2 drop. There, I spoiled it for you.
Yeah, Daryl's not wrong.
He's actually just planning on playing in every single tournament over the weekend.
In O2 dropping.
Yes, exactly. That's the only way to have enough time.
I might do it. We'll see.
All right, we'll tune in then. Until then, stay frosty, San Diego. Danger zone, bitches. Danger zone.